Hello and welcome back to the Blockchain.com podcast. My name is Garrick Heilman. I'm the head of research at Blockchain.com and a visiting fellow at the London School of Economics. One of the most important and still not widely understood aspects of Bitcoin is mining. While we often see media headlines comparing the energy consumption of Bitcoin mining to the size of a small country, less well understood is the fundamental purpose and benefits of Bitcoin mining. To talk about this, I recently spoke with Jamie Leverton, CEO of Hut 8, a publicly traded Bitcoin mining company in North America. In addition to covering the basics of Bitcoin mining, Jamie and I discussed a range of topics, including why many miners like Hut 8 hodl or hang on to Bitcoins they mine rather than selling them on the open market. We discussed the Bitcoin Mining Council, of which Hut 8 is a member, why it was created and what is its role, and how Jamie sees Bitcoin mining evolving in the months and years to come. Well, Jamie, welcome to the Blockchain.com podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
We have a tradition where we ask all our guests how they earned their first ever money, dollar, pound, euro, something else.
Well, for me, it was the Canadian dollar. I am from a pretty small town in Ontario, about 2.5 hours east of Toronto. And my first dollar that I earned, not from an immediate family member, came from delivering the weekly newspaper flyer. And for the life of me, I can't remember what it was called, but my brother and I had that weekly paper route, and we would take our wagon around the neighborhood and deliver the weekly flyer. So that was my first hard-earned dollar.
Awesome. It's a time-honored way to make a first buck. I think that's exactly how I did it as well. But tell us, Jamie, a bit about yourself and you've had a career prior to Bitcoin mining. What did you do before and how did you first learn about cryptocurrency and get into this whole space?
Whew, that's a big question. I had a career that started in the traditional technology industry. I started working for IBM in 2000 and have really been predominantly in the tech space ever since. I spent just under 10 years at IBM and then worked for Bell Canada, for BlackBerry. I also worked for National Bank in their capital markets group, and then spent the 5 years before joining Hut 8 working for Cogeco Peer 1 and eStructure, two of Canada's great data center companies. eStructure actually ended up buying the Canadian assets of Cogeco Peer 1, so that's now one entity under the eStructure umbrella. So I've got a long history in the data center cloud managed services space, and that's really what prepared me to take the helm of Hut 8 as a Bitcoin mining company. Really, at the end of the day, we are a data center business where it's a different type of compute, but the motion is very much the same. It's a large amount of power applied to a large amount of compute, operated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by our own staff at our sites across the country. That's really kind of how I got here. My background in the traditional data center space led me to my now 16-month-old crypto career. To answer your question about how did I first get into the space, I orange-pilled myself back in 2017 when I was in the traditional data center space during the last bull market, and our phone started ringing off the hook for people looking to bring this new type of compute into our data centers that I hadn't heard of. And it really just exploded overnight. And so I started to explore what all of the excitement was about. And really, once I'd gone all the way down the rabbit hole, you can't unlearn what you learn when you do that. So it had a special place in my heart. And when the opportunity to take over Hut 8 presented itself, I definitely couldn't say no.
So Jamie, tell us about Hut 8. What is it exactly?
So Hut 8 is one of the oldest publicly traded Bitcoin mining companies on the planet. We are Canadian operated. We've got two mining sites in Alberta and a third under construction in North Bay. We were born through an RTO late 2017, started trading on the Toronto Venture Exchange in 2018. And then in 2020, we moved up to the big board of the TSX. And last spring, we dual listed onto the NASDAQ as well. We've expanded a little bit. Our roots used to be really all just Bitcoin mining at our sites in Medicine Hat and Drumheller, both in Alberta. And then last year we announced the construction of a third site, which we expect the first phase of to be completed this quarter in North Bay. We also started to mine Ethereum last spring. We did a deal with NVIDIA and Dell Enterprise Grade chassis. We put the NVIDIA graphics cards in and started mining Ethereum. We also host, so we have a couple of, one strategic partner that hosts at our site in Medicine Hat. Part of our claim to fame in the beginning was we were the first publicly traded Bitcoin miner to hold Bitcoin on balance sheet. That's always been part of our strategy. So we've been holding a portion of the Bitcoin we mine on our balance sheet since inception. And actually, when I took over in December, the last Bitcoin we sold was a few weeks later, beginning of January, and we haven't sold a Bitcoin since. And we now have just over 5,800 Bitcoin on our balance sheet, some of which we use to earn yield through partnership relationships with both Genesis and Galaxy. We also stood up a third-party repair center. So we actually do our own on-site repair and maintenance of our MicroBT equipment. And we also maintain repair equipment for other Bitcoin miners across North America as well as Northern Europe. And last but not least, about 3 weeks ago, we announced the closing of a transaction where we purchased the cloud and data center business from another publicly traded Canadian company, Terrigo. So we now have added five new enterprise data centers to our fleet, as well as just over 400 enterprise customers in the cloud, colocation, and managed services space. Those data centers, we've got two in Vancouver, two in the Greater Toronto area, and one in Kelowna. So we now operate a really diversified fleet of data center assets, everything from our traditional mining data centers, mining sites, all the way up to two tier three data centers that operate in Mississauga and Kelowna. So we are really a full stack infrastructure provider now, if you will, to both the traditional and the nascent high-performance computing space.
So JB, I think a lot of people still find this whole concept of Bitcoin mining rather confusing, and what exactly is happening. I'll often, when I'm teaching an intro to crypto class, I'll show people pictures of facilities where Bitcoin mining is taking place. And that actually really helps people kind of start to visualize and get a sense of what this thing called Bitcoin is, seeing these computers and data centers. But can you just kind of, you know, for a newcomer, kind of introduce, you know, the purpose of Bitcoin mining, what's actually happening at a high level?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I've talked about, the Bitcoin mining sites are really what we would call tier zero data centers. So we actually, our sites in Medicine Hat in Alberta, if you go onto our website, you can see some of the pictures of the sites. And in our case, we use a container-based data center. So we've got 96 containers, each of them just over a megawatt. And they're filled with specialized compute. So you'll hear them referred to as ASICs in our industry, but really it's compute that's purpose-built to only mine Bitcoin. And what mining Bitcoin refers to, it's an unfortunate term, mining, which really doesn't do a good job of representing the actual process, which is really intensive computations are done by this Bitcoin mining equipment or Bitcoin compute equipment. And miners around the world, Bitcoin miners around the world, are essentially competing against one another to be the first to solve a cryptographic riddle, which happens about every 10 minutes. So approximately every 10 minutes around the world, a riddle is solved. And when a riddle is solved, the miner who solves that that puzzle is rewarded with what's called a block reward. So they get 6.25 Bitcoin are distributed every 10 minutes to the miner that solves the riddle correctly, as well as the transaction fees, which are incorporated into the block. So each time a block is solved, there are a number of transactions that are processed and ultimately added to the Bitcoin ledger, the Bitcoin blockchain. And so the purpose of a Bitcoin miner is both the mint in that it's how new Bitcoin comes into circulation, as well as the transaction processor. So those are the two functions through which Bitcoin miners receive revenue in the form of Bitcoin. And then all miners working on this process globally also act to ensure that the Bitcoin blockchain is secured. So it's all of that mining horsepower that actually secures the Bitcoin blockchain and processes the transactions and mints the new Bitcoin that comes into existence. So at a very high level, that's what all of this compute power is doing in association with Bitcoin.
Yeah, I'm glad you ended by touching on the security aspect, because I think this is something that newcomers still don't quite understand, which is they hear about cryptocurrency being stolen. There was a big story this past week two people arrested in relationship with a hack of an exchange, a cryptocurrency exchange from many years ago. And that's very different from the network itself and how the network is secured, the Bitcoin blockchain, the actual protocol network, and how that is held up for 13 plus years and been unhackable itself. It's businesses and exchanges that sometimes get targeted by cyber criminals and we see coins stolen from those, but the network itself, secured by companies like Hut 8 and other miners around the world, has proven incredibly secure and resilient. And that's so foundational to why we're here talking about Bitcoin today.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely a fact that if there weren't Bitcoin miners, there would be no Bitcoin.
Absolutely. So Bitcoin's been operating for 13 years, and it started off as a very kind of small thing. Some nerds, some geeks got involved with it, and it's now turned into this big professional business with publicly traded companies like Hut 8, and it's really evolved a lot. Can you talk about the evolution of Bitcoin mining, both kind of what's happened in the recent years and where it might be going?
Oh, yeah, that's a big question. So I think, maybe I'll take a step back. So for those of you that are kind of new to this world, there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin in existence. And the last Bitcoin will be mined in the year 2140. To date, there have been approximately 19 million Bitcoin mined from the beginning of that 13-ish year period when the Bitcoin blockchain first came into existence and mining first started. And so if we go back back in time to when it first started, you could mine Bitcoin on a laptop. People were mining, then you needed a little bit more high performance compute. So people were mining in their garages, and then, as things evolved and got more sophisticated, ultimately you needed, ASIC based equipment, which is what's used today, really expensive, high performance compute that needs to be in specialized, infrastructure in order to cool it properly. And so the amount of capital required to participate in Bitcoin mining has gone up significantly since the inception of mining and the blockchain. And we do see that continuing. The amount of capital that continues to flow into this industry and building out new infrastructure. We saw an announcement just either last night or this morning to a $2 billion investment in Bitcoin mining coming out of the UAE, one of the largest single site announcements that we've seen in this space. So it just continues to get increasingly sophisticated, larger and larger players coming into this space. The geographic distribution of miners has moved significantly, even in the very recent past. It was about a year ago, more than half of Bitcoin mining globally was done in China. And then we saw last spring, China banned Bitcoin mining. So Bitcoin, the geographic distribution of mining adjusted significantly over last year. And now the United States is the largest geography mining Bitcoin, with just over 35%, I believe, of Bitcoin mining now happening in the U.S. And so we've seen a massive kind of geographic shift in where mining's being done. But all of that to say, we continue to see just increased industrialization of the mining industry continuing, and with really no signs of that capital flow into this space slowing down in the foreseeable future. We also have a much larger number of publicly traded miners. I think this time last year there might have been maybe 10 or so trading on the NASDAQ and the Toronto Stock Exchange. And now we're well over 20 in the space. So, and again, a trend that I think continues to have momentum behind it. So significant shifts in the industry over a relatively short period of time. And then again, we've got, all of this compute is ultimately competing for only 2 million more Bitcoin to be distributed over the next 110 years or so.
That was an awesome overview, and you touched on a lot of things that I'd love to follow up on. One of the first things is, you know, what it takes to be successful in mining. And you mentioned, you know, the computing hardware has become more specialized, more expensive. Some of these ASICs, these application-specific integrated circuits that are purpose-built for Bitcoin mining, I mean, can cost upwards of $10,000 per unit. You know, I like to explain that to be successful in Bitcoin mining, you kind of need at least four things. You know, number one, you need access to low-cost energy. Number two, you need to have, you know, an internet connection. You have to be able to actually plug into the network, you know, via either broadband or satellite or some other means. And then, you know, you ideally would be in a colder environment too, because these computers get quite hot as they're crunching the numbers, trying to solve that riddle or that puzzle. So you do see a lot of Bitcoin mining happening in colder Northern Hemisphere countries. And then also, there's been some articles written about, as Bitcoin mining has proliferated, about the noise, you know, that some of these facilities can generate, you know, the fans, you know, running very, very loudly to cool the machine. So having, you know, a location that is not close to a population center, is also advantageous. But there's other things too: security, physical security of the site, regulatory clarity. Can you talk about the various factors that go into being a successful Bitcoin miner?
Well, yeah, no, you certainly touched on a lot of them. The access to capital is key because as you mentioned, the mining equipment can be incredibly expensive. So you want to make sure that you've got access to as low a cost of capital as possible to invest in the equipment and also in the power infrastructure. That of course supports that. Low cost power is a critical input. Our largest operating expense is the cost of power for most if not all Bitcoin miners. So I can't stress enough how important low cost power is. You mentioned the mining often takes place in cooler climates. That's absolutely true for us. All of our sites are in cold climates and take advantage of Mother Nature to cool our equipment. So we're not spending capital or operating expenses on infrastructure required to cool the equipment. We do take advantage of the cold climate to do so for us. But we see Texas as now one of the largest geographies for Bitcoin mining in North America. And Texas, of course, is not cool. And then I mentioned the large investment just recently announced coming out of the UAE, which also is absolutely not cool. And that's so those climates that are hot and can't depend on Mother Nature are increasingly looking at new technologies such as immersion cooling, where equipment goes in a type of liquid that helps to distribute the heat, keep it cool, drive incremental efficiency in those climates where you can't depend on Mother Nature to do it for you. So certainly seeing a lot of advances in the technology there. And then also, I mean, a lot's happening in the Bitcoin mining hardware space as well. So this time last year, there were really only two players in the space, both Chinese manufacturers, Bitmain and MicroBT. And then in the last few weeks, we've seen new entrants coming, a new company by the name of NewMiner being announced, and then Intel announcing that they are now getting into the manufacture of Bitcoin mining equipment as well. Obviously a huge announcement for the industry to have Intel coming into the space, and certainly we believe a sign of the increasing adoption and professionalization of the industry as a whole. So really exciting developments coming for the infrastructure as well.
You mentioned also the shift last year in the mining landscape when China announced its big crackdown around the end of May of last year, and the massive drop in mining activity that subsequently occurred in China. It appeared that it hasn't completely gone away. The Chinese government doesn't appear to be completely all powerful, especially when there's a lot of money to be made. But certainly there was a big shift, to me, I think it was pretty remarkable that such a big change could happen in the Bitcoin mining landscape. And basically, you know, the trains kept running, everything more or less, you know, kept running pretty smoothly. And I wonder if you could kind of like reflect on that, what that says about the resiliency of the Bitcoin network.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can't imagine any other similar situation where you can essentially have half the network almost disappear overnight, and it doesn't miss a beat. Everything just dynamically adjusted on the fly, as it's always done. For those of us that are in the mining space, it really did mean our profitability almost doubled overnight, because of course our operating costs didn't change, but all of a sudden the double the amount of block rewards were available to those left participating in the network. So definitely a positive event for the miners that were mining outside of China, and a positive event for those analyzing the resilience of the network, where again, it did not miss a beat. It lost half of the hash rate overnight and just kept on performing as it always has.
Yep. So we've seen Bitcoin's price come down recently, and yet hash rate keeps going up. And you know, oftentimes hash rate and price, you know, are correlated. You know, as the price keeps going up, we'll see, you know, more computing power coming online as higher cost electricity operations, you know, move into, you know, the black and become more profitable. But, you know, price has been going down and hash rate's been going up. Can you comment on that dynamic, how sustainable that is, and what's driving that?
Well, I think we've had really interesting dynamics at play over the last year. Bitcoin mining, in part, that large reduction in hash rate created an environment where Bitcoin mining was one of the most profitable industries on the planet last year. Really incredible profit margins coming out of the large scale miners, and I think that attracted a lot of attention to the space. It certainly attracted a lot of new investment, but with the supply chain being constrained in the way that it was, it's taken a while for that investment to materialize in built out infrastructure with mining capabilities ready and coming online. So I think a lot of the investment in the hash rate that's coming online now was made, you know, 6-12 months ago. So it's a bit of a lead lag situation. But I would also suggest that as we see increasing institutional adoption of Bitcoin in particular as an asset class, as a store of value, as a hedge against this inflationary environment that we're seeing, it's attracting more and more attention and more belief that this is an industry that's here to stay and is here to stay for the long term. So I think you're seeing kind of both of those things. It's taken the hash rate a little bit longer to come online due to the supply chain constraints, and you're seeing a lot more bullish activity in capital allocation coming into this space, truly believing that it's here for the long term.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know, this gets back to something else you mentioned earlier about how, you know, Hut 8 is holding Bitcoins that it's mining on its balance sheet. And that's a relatively common practice for many miners, many of the publicly traded miners, and speaks to the medium to long-term confidence that miners have in Bitcoin and the growth of the network and the growth and adoption. And I think that also this phenomenon where, you know, just in recent weeks, we've seen price come down, but hash rate continue to go up again is another kind of strong vote of confidence from miners in Bitcoin's, you know, longer term adoption and growth potential. But on this question of holding Bitcoins on the balance sheet and rather than, you know, selling them as they're mined, you know, there's some debate about this. And I wondered if you could kind of speak to the decision there to do that. And why it's such a common practice amongst miners?
Yeah, well, it didn't used to be common. We were the only publicly traded miner holding on balance sheet for a long period of time, and then over the last, I would say, 18 months, it became increasingly common to see miners holding, and now most public miners do hold on balance sheet, and that's partially thanks to the increasing adoption and the number of products now available for miners to receive financing. So it used to be miners really didn't have a choice. They would have to sell their Bitcoin to finance their operations because it was such a new industry. It was so volatile that other sources of capital were few and far between. But as the industry's matured, you see a lot more miners going public. There's a ton of activity in the equity markets. You're also seeing a lot more activity on the debt side. There's lots of great companies out there that we've partnered with over the years that offer financing for infrastructure. We've used Foundry for that. There's also a number of players in this space that that will loan against the Bitcoin that you have on your balance sheet. So you can pledge the Bitcoin as collateral to raise capital without having to actually sell the Bitcoin down. So I think really what you're seeing is just a lot more optionality for miners to be able to fund the business without having to sell Bitcoin. And certainly all of us participating in this industry are believers of Bitcoin and its long-term ability to be a store of value.
Yeah, and certainly the hodlers out there appreciate the Bitcoin miners hodling alongside alongside them. I have to, of course, turn to, I'm sure, your favorite topic when the subject of Bitcoin mining comes up, you know, the energy issue. I remember, I think this first kind of getting mainstream media attention back in 2017 during that cycle when Bitcoin's price went up in December 2017 to close to $20,000. And there was all these headlines about how much energy the Bitcoin network was consuming, you know, equal to the amount of a small country. Since then, of course, we've seen Bitcoin adoption grow even more. And in this last year, that issue again started to receive a lot of mainstream attention. And, you know, this might be a good opportunity also to bring in the Bitcoin Mining Council and what that is. And just what's your response to the many critics of Bitcoin's energy footprint and what's happening with regards to you know, the sources of energy of Bitcoin mining today?
Yeah, it is a very hotly debated subject of conversation. I contend that that global Bitcoin mining uses a negligible amount of energy. The data that we have from the Bitcoin Mining Council is that global Bitcoin mining uses 0.142% of world energy production. It's about equal to the amount of energy consumed by holiday lights, just as a point of reference. So I think the debate is really about, does Bitcoin have value at all? Is Bitcoin worthy of energy consumption? And that's much more esoteric. The Bitcoin Mining Council was formed back in the spring, really to get the industry together, to share data, to be transparent with the data, and to talk about our industry, to share best practices in our industry, and to try to get more of the facts out. Because the reality is that while Bitcoin mining uses a lot of energy, it's getting increasingly efficient every single quarter. It's using more renewables than any other industry that we are compared against. And the statistics vary, but somewhere between 55 and 65% of all global Bitcoin mining is estimated to use renewable sources of energy. And so it is a hotly contested topic, but the council's been there and done an excellent job. The Mining Council now speaks for just under 50% of all Bitcoin miners globally. So it's a very well represented group. And really, we are there to try to counteract some of the FUD that continues to circulate directed at Bitcoin mining, really in isolation as a user of energy. It's not a debate I ever had before running traditional data centers or traditional cloud compute. Yet it's the topic I'm most often asked about now, running data centers that are being used for Bitcoin mining as an output.
Yeah. Yeah, we could do a whole episode on just this topic. So rather than rehash, the whole debate and argument. I think you summed up kind of the key points nicely. And China reducing its activity, I mean, that certainly cut down a lot of the the coal power Bitcoin mining. You know, things are getting better, I guess, is one of the key takeaways for people who are concerned about this. And is, in my view, is the grid naturally goes more green, becomes more renewable, you know, Bitcoin's going to follow that.
Right. And Bitcoin mining acts as a great grid stabilizer. So where Bitcoin mining can happen in conjunction with local utilities and local municipalities, there's an incredible opportunity for symbiotic relationships to evolve that really bring value to all of the participants in a way that no other industry can. I think that's one of the most beautiful and often overlooked elements to Bitcoin mining, in that we can power up and power down within minutes, and we do so in local communities when peak demand is happening on the power grid. You saw this happen last week in Texas. Texas was going through a cold weather snap, and Bitcoin miners powered their mining activities down so that the grid had as much power as it needed to feed the local communities for their peak power demands. And I think where we can continue to work together, we can create value for all participants in the chain and really act as a catalyst for increasing the investment in renewables, where business cases were hard to get through in many cases. But when there's a Bitcoin miner at the table helping to fund and to monetize that investment right out of the gate, I think that this could probably be the single largest benefit to driving increased investment in renewables.
Yep. No, I'm really glad you brought that up. I mean, you know, people are probably aware that, you know, solar power and wind power and some of these renewable sources, their energy production is not being consumed consistently throughout the day. There's peaks and troughs in consumption, and what's going to eat those electrons during those troughs of consumption, and what's going to help pay for that infrastructure that can also be shipped out to you know, the place where the energy is being generated. You know, Bitcoin mining has some really exciting, I think, applications there, and can be a big part of helping maybe to accelerate the rollout of renewable infrastructure. So just as we're getting close to the end of time here, I wondered if you could kind of like talk about the local impact in communities of Bitcoin mining. You know, this is something that, you know, I think is not focused on enough, you know, the fact that this can help with local economic development and jobs. And can you speak to that side of Bitcoin mining?
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it earlier. Often Bitcoin mining is happening in outside of population dense urban areas. So I can speak to our site in Medicine Hat. Medicine Hat, Alberta, is actually an independent power authority. So this city is also its own independent power producer, and we work we're a tenant of the city, and we are directly connected to the local power facility. So we are allowing them to monetize the power that they need, or the power that they generate, regardless of demand. And then, of course, we like I referenced to my brethren in Texas, we shut down when the grid needs it for peak demand. And then also when it comes to jobs. So when I took over, we had about 20 full-time employees in Medicine Hat. And I talked about some of the expansion that we had done, now mining Ethereum, now having a tech repair shop that also repairs devices from across North America and Northern Europe. So we've almost doubled the number of full-time skilled labor jobs at our site in Medicine Hat. We've done the same doubling at our site in Drumheller, and we're building out a new site in North Bay, which brings a number of new jobs into that local community as well.
Awesome. Well, we're just about out of time. So where can people, Jamie, go to learn more about yourself and Hut 8?
Well, absolutely on our website, hut8mining.com. I'm lucky in that I have a very unique name, Jamie Leverton. Jamie spelled J-A-I-M-E. So I'm very easy to find on Twitter which is at Jamie Leverton, or on LinkedIn. And myself and my team really pride ourselves on making ourselves available to help as we kind of advance this incredible ecosystem. So anything we can do to help your listeners that might be new to the space or have questions, please feel free to reach out to anyone on the HUD 8 team. Our website's got some great resources on it as well for people looking for education. But we're not hard to find, and we're always happy to engage with new curious folks.
Thank you very much. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the episode. And if you're enjoying our podcast, please rate us and leave a review, as it really helps boost our visibility to more listeners. Also, if you have a topic you'd like to see us cover, please get in touch at the following email address, podcast@blockchain.com. Once again, that's podcast@blockchain.com.